Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Gary Vaynerchuk joins Amber and I. And boy, he's got a lot of energy. He's going to talk about his latest book. Plus, Pinterest did very well on Cyber Monday. And how do you make a router be something very attractive that you want to bring home to your mom? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 139, recorded Friday, December 6th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 1 million high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR1213. And by Warby Parker Eyewear. Get boutique-quality, classically crafted eyewear at revolutionary prices. For a free home try-on of 5 stylish frames of your choice, go to WarbyParker.com. When you decide to purchase, enter the promo code SOCIALHOUR and get 3-day free shipping. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Friday edition of The Social Hour, which, by the way, isn't going to be shot live on Fridays for very much longer. We just have a few weeks left until we move to our new day, which is on Thursday mornings, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. I am Sarah Lane at Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. I'm in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, not traveling this week, which is always good. And Sarah, I have to tell you, I'm really excited that Gary Vee is going to come on the show and talk to us about his new book. And who knows what else, Sarah, right? Because he's always so interesting.
Exactly. Of course, Gary Vee is none other than Gary Vaynerchuk, who is really, truly one of the most, I don't know. I mean, you could learn the most from someone like Gary Vee when it comes to social media than almost anybody else. He's written books on the matter. In fact, he has a new book out. He's going to talk to us about that, plus a bunch of other stuff. He'll be joining us a little bit later in the show. And yes, very exciting, Amber. It's he's just a lot of fun. So I can't wait to see what goodies he has up his sleeve today. But let's start off with, a real tragedy story. If you followed a train accident that happened last Sunday in New York, coming from New York City out into the suburbs, there was a driver who nodded off, dozed off, as he says it. There was a derailment going around a curve. The train was going extremely fast, much faster than it was supposed to. There were casualties. A lot of other people were injured. A pretty horrific situation.
Yeah, definitely horrific. And Daniel Cohen, who lives right above the accident, had sent us an email just to talk about how he was one of the first on the scene who was tweeting out photos of the train crash. And it's a really interesting email that he's written us where he explains that he called 911 and then he started taking photos and shooting video. His Twitter feed went nuts and he got requests from news media outlets pretty much right away all around the world. And he said he really couldn't keep up with the request of people looking for some of the content that he had taken, whether it was in photos or in video. And, he explains that obviously he would prefer he didn't get this attention under such tragic times, but just describes what a frenzy it was in the social media space as soon as news outlets were aware that he had so much content covering the accident and they really wanted to get their hands on it. He sold some footage, as he explains, to NBC News. And it seems like the frenzy kind of keeps going, as he emailed just a little while ago explaining he had created a time-lapse video of the train tracks being repaired.
Yeah, which is, it's remarkable, really. I mean, the angle that that Daniel has gotten here, and this is just one of some of the stuff that, in fact, he's in our chat room, or someone who says he's Daniel is in our chat room. Hey, Daniel, thanks so much for sharing your story with us. And it is really interesting, Amber. You know, obviously this is, it's awful. This is a terrible situation, but just goes to show you how much eyewitnesses who have pretty decent cameras, pretty decent video capabilities, who just happened to be in a specific place help the news organizations actually get their footage before they can get a satellite truck out to the scene. And it's in more real time. And the fact that he said he's actually... he works on documentaries. This is kind of his line of work. So he knows what he's doing. But just by accident, it ends up being possibly lucrative just for a citizen to kind of be at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, for years we've been talking about citizen journalists and just explaining that there would be a day when people were everywhere taking photos of any type of incident that happened like this. And I think we've really arrived at that time, Sarah. I mean, it really is true that no matter what happens, the first people on the scene are not necessarily the paramedics or the police. It tends to be just average citizens who are walking by or in the area, and they tend to be the ones who get the first look at what's happening. And, you know, it's not just for news media outlets to share the story, but I think we've seen more and more that sometimes the photos and videos become part of the evidence of what has taken place because there is so much coverage from so many different viewpoints.
Exactly. You know, Daniel notes that he says he didn't really bother with licensing and fees for a lot of the organizations that wanted to use photos and videos. He says he thinks if he had tried to do that, most probably would have just passed and found somebody else who, you know, had a similar photo or video and tried to just get something put together without having to pay, which is also an interesting perspective because I think a lot of people who consider themselves citizen journalists, whether on purpose or kind of just by coincidence, might think, well, this is something that, you know, I don't want to share this with anybody unless I can get paid. And that's not always the attitude that people have. I mean, others feel like, well, this is information. Everybody should have it. And it's more important that, you know, I just get credit for taking the photo or video and passing it along.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Daniel, for sharing that. Great just to get some insight into what was happening at that time. And Sarah, another story we wanted to talk about, and we've talked a lot about Pinterest over the past few months, and this story is particularly interesting, especially as I think retailers try to figure out how to take advantage of Pinterest in a smart way. I read this article, which was floating around the web after Cyber Monday, saying that on Cyber Monday, Pinterest more than tripled the revenue sent to online retailers. And I think this really speaks to the conversation that we've had over and over again over the past few months, that Pinterest has become so valuable to so many brands, particularly in the retail space.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are still a little bit crazy, right? Pinterest doubled the revenue sent to retailers on Black Friday and more than tripled the revenue, so it was like 3.6 times normal revenue on Cyber Monday. That's compared to a 30-day average, which was preceding the Thanksgiving holiday. So this is all, you know, just a week plus ago. I don't know. I guess it makes sense, Amber. I should probably ask you, did you participate in Cyber Monday at all? Because it's one of those days that I feel is pushed on me so much that I actively do not participate and I probably miss out on a lot of deals.
It's so funny, Sarah. I think we're a lot alike. I tend to do that when I feel pressure about something like that, where I feel like, oh, I should be shopping. I just get so sick of hearing about it. The last thing I want to do is shop. So while I did see some great deals that were happening online, I was probably more interested in stories like this that were coming out of the weekend than I was in actually shopping. Because it just, every year, it just seems to get crazier and crazier with Black Friday and Cyber Monday. And people just act in ways that, you start to wonder about the human race. So at the end of the day, I think it's interesting to look at some of these stories, particularly around how Pinterest can help retailers. But I did not do any shopping. I know.
I didn't either. But it sounds like coming from Pinterest and you know, really any analytics company, is that anybody who says, oh, Pinterest is about scrapbooking, you know, in a daydreaming sort of a way about your, you know, your future home, or an aspirational sort of a way about that party you're going to throw, that this is actually a practical tool. It looks good. People love it. It's very hot right now. But in many ways, Pinterest was built specifically to be able to click through and buy products. And it's working that way. And that's exactly how people are using it. And the word of mouth that Pinterest is just this sort of fun tool it still gets referred to as the women's network. But for a lot of people to be able to create a lot of boards, it's about saving products for later. I mean, it's almost like the new Delicious.
Yeah, No, I think
if anybody
exactly
remembers
right.
that, I don't know how much I'm dating myself by saying delicious, but Amber, I know you know delicious.
I know, sir. I'm with you on this one. So I agree. It is kind of like the new delicious, although a lot more visual, more interesting. So an interesting story about Pinterest. And this is another one that would be interesting to marketers out there, talking about Facebook, how Facebook has recently admitted that organic reach is falling short and urges marketers to buy advertisements on their social networks. So I just thought this was kind of interesting to Facebook. But for Facebook to almost admit a flaw in the sense that they're saying that the fact that, you know, many brands may think that individuals will just immediately share their content, it's really kind of dwindling in some ways. And so you have to come up with new tactics on Facebook if you're a marketer. And that could mean buying advertisements if you really want to be able to see your return on investment. And I don't know about you, Sarah, but it seems like this last week I've read a lot of stories about Facebook that it appeared to kind of, you know, they're pretty negative about Facebook and time people are spending there. And the story, you know, it continues in that vein.
I definitely find if I'm looking at my news feed every couple of days, I wouldn't say I'm really looking at it that hard more than once a day. But yeah, you see people sharing stories here and there. It's something that happens where you could so-and-so shared a story and then you every once in a while I'll say, oh, that looks kind of interesting and I'll click through. But yeah, for the most part, if I see something on the web, to put it on Facebook, it just doesn't even register to me. I mean, I'm either going to go to Twitter or I'm just going to maybe like it if I see somebody else share it on Facebook. So I can see how, as far as marketers are concerned, Facebook would have to say, listen, we understand that it's not just happening because there are all these billions of people on Facebook. You know, all of those numbers probably make it really disappointing when you see what the dismal click-through rate is for a lot of stories that are supposedly so widely shared on a network like Facebook. But buying ads it's a little bit, what's the word? I don't know. It makes me a little discouraged that there's really much more to the future of Facebook than seeing more promotional stuff, because my newsfeed is littered with that now. So-and-so likes this brand, you know, and then you see these little sort of threaded, all of my friends who have liked Zappos, let's say. And that's fine and good. I have no problem with most of these brands, but it really has kind of cluttered my experience. And it's something that I'm starting to notice.
Yeah, I notice it as well, not just with brands necessarily, but also with individuals who I know. Maybe if they are speakers or they put on seminars, I'm starting to notice people with personal brands going online and advertising on Facebook. So it seems also to be another trend. So I don't necessarily find myself clicking on those ads, but clearly people do. I mean, Facebook is making money off of advertisers coming to the platform. But at the end of the day, I just worry a little bit if they've lost that organic engagement from individuals who used to come there and want to share, and people are sharing less and sharing less over time. I mean, again, it just makes you look to other platforms like Pinterest and maybe even Google Plus or Twitter, wherever it might be, and realize that, you know, Facebook is kind of slowing down.
You know, it's interesting that we're even talking about this, because there's another story that's somewhat related, came out on All Things D this week, that's related to Facebook saying, we're going to change the way things surface on the newsfeed. So this is not about promotional posts or paid for posts. This is just sort of like, how many stories are you going to see from BuzzFeed about the 12 cutest kitties? That's the sort of thing that we've all started to kind of equate Facebook with. You get, you know, something that's kind of viral and everybody shares it, and then all of a sudden Facebook starts to feel like this, you know, it's like link bait candy articles. And sometimes they're fine and good, but you get too many of them and you start to feel like, oh, it's just a bunch of fluff. In fact, Facebook talked to Peter Kafka over at All Things D about how they're changing the way that the newsfeed works. And what they say, it's a little vague, is that the main page that Facebook users see on their desktop and on their phones will change the way that it ranks content, because it wants to promote high quality content. And that Facebook says they want to make things like meme photos harder to see. Which is weird, because that's the sort of stuff that gets shared. But this is Facebook saying we have to make some sort of a distinction that we're not all just sort of like cutesy viral stuff that people might start thinking Facebook, you know, too much of that, and you might start thinking Facebook's a waste of time. You know, you don't get anything of value. And there's a really great interview over at All Things D, and we'll have that link in our show notes at twit.tv/TSH on this episode. But Amber, what do you think? Do you think that Facebook seems not serious enough? Do they want to be more of a place where news breaks, a la Twitter? Is that where this is coming from?
Well, I think the problem with Facebook is perhaps that they want to be everything to everyone right now, right? And we've seen more of the social networks that have done perhaps better in the past few months. We've seen them just focus a little more on different audiences, more niche-oriented audiences. So I think with Facebook, just hard. I mean, it's hard to appeal to a 13-year-old and a 93-year-old, right? And that's what they've been trying to do for a long time. So we'll just have to see what happens with this one. But you look at Pinterest, you know, maybe it's 80% women and they really know their audience. Facebook, maybe they're a little lost, but I imagine they may find their way again.
I think so too. Hey, it's Facebook, right? I mean, they're big. They've got a lot of smart people working there and a whole lot of money. So they've certainly got some time to do some experimenting. You know, Amber, in just a minute, we're going to have Gary Vaynerchuk join us on the show. But before we do that, let's take a moment to thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Social media solutions from SAP is the product that we're always talking about on the show because it's so perfect for us, because we know that there are a lot of social media managers, people working on the communication side in the enterprise. And they have to know what people are saying about their brand on social media. And it can be an overwhelming task. I mean, my goodness, especially around the holidays. If you work at a brand and you've got products and you're trying to make as many sales as possible, I mean, this is the time where it's really, really important to reach out to your customers and make sure that they're happy. Well, how do you reach out to them unless you know exactly who's talking about you and how they feel? It might be on someone's blog. It might be on Twitter. Could be on Facebook. All sorts of places where people can voice their concerns or their frustrations or their praise of your company, or maybe a competitor. All of that stuff is very relevant for your efforts going forward. That's the listening component of social media solutions, is where is all of this feedback coming from? Then you gather all of that together. It's all done with natural language processing, so it can intelligently know if somebody's upset or you know, if there's a certain kind of wording. A lot of that gets done so that when it reaches you, you go, okay, yeah, I know what to do. That's actually the engaging component. That's the fun part of it, because this is how you reach out. You say, okay, I see that you've had an issue. Maybe there's something wrong with our website. How can I help? Those are the sorts of things where customers go, wow, that company is really on top of it. They're listening, they care, and then they walk away happy, and you've done your job. So there's a listening component and an engaging component with social media solutions. Both are extremely important and make your job easier, particularly in the enterprise when you've got a team. You've got Joe handles tech support and Laura handles something else, you know, sort of an outreach. Social media solutions from SAP is more than marketing, gives you more than marketing by improving the customer service and support experience. If you want to learn more, go to sap.com/twit. And take a guided tour. See for yourself how social media solutions from SAP works and can work for your company. Give you some breathing room. Help it help you. And thanks to SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Well, Amber, the time has come. We've got Mr. Gary V, a.k.a. Social Media. I don't know, even know what you call yourself. Are you a ninja? Are you something better than that, Gary?
I'd like to say I'm an entrepreneur, so I keep it basic.
Oh, Sarah. That's good. That's good. Well, thanks so much for joining us. You're, as you mentioned, you're in a hotel in Vegas right now after some sort of a speaking engagement. Was there anything exciting?
No, just a private thing. Too crazy. Just normal stuff. Just trying to help marketers figure out this insane, busy, noisy world.
And Gary, you have a new book out, and it has an interesting title. I've seen you do many interviews about this book so far, and I have to ask you about the title just to kick things off, because it's kind of a unique one. Jab, 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 right hook. What is that all about?
Are you telling me my child is ugly, Amber?
I am not. Okay, I am just cool. Telling you that it's unique, just like you, Gary. How about that?
It stands for give, and then ask, which is my basic thesis on how to live life, let alone put out content on social networks. And so I decided to name it that because of that notion. Plus, I think boxing is misunderstood. People think it's two people going into the ring and punching each other, when it's actually known as a sweet science. Put a lot of analytics and science into how I put out my content, how VaynerMedia clients put out their content, and I thought it felt right to make that one.
So, Gary, I mean, we all, we've known each other for quite a while, and you've been, you've really put, I would say, your heart and soul into social media, more than even a lot of people who work in social media by trade. And I don't know what the approach is that you've found that has worked so well. I mean, I think part of it is your personality, because you're very engaging and you've got a lot of enthusiasm, and I know that that rubs off on other people. But as the years have gone on, how do you feel like your strategy has changed when reaching out to people?
You know, I think that's actually what hasn't changed, Sarah, right? I think that, you know, actually, I think it's kind of funny. I actually think my extrovert kind of personality, my really good peak, you know, speaking skills on stage, you know, my shocking good looks, all these things have taken away, all these things have taken away from the fact that I actually, you know, that I actually build businesses, right? I mean, Sarah, before I kind of met all of you guys, I built a $50 million retail e-commerce business, right? So right. I think that, you know, the Gary V stuff takes away from the fact that nothing's really changed for me. I have a lot of energy for execution, right, Sarah? I think, you know, I think that when I first kind of hit the tech scene, I could see a lot of people thinking that I was going to fizzle out, right? It was this like hype thing. And I think what I'd like to think, and what I hope, in the same way that I've taken VaynerMedia from 20 to 300 people in the last 2 years, is that over time, my body of work will show that I'm an executor, that I'm a marathon runner. And I actually think everybody else's habits have changed, and they've wavered from giving and engaging and living that social media life. And I think I've just continued it and continue to execute because I have a lot of patience, and I don't mind giving a lot up front with then the hope of something in return, if there ever is anything that I'm looking for in return.
One of the things that I noticed that's a little bit different in this book than your previous books, just to pick up on what you were just talking about, is that I feel like it's more practical in some ways. I mean, there really is some fabulous advice in here for individuals who want to read different case studies in terms of how companies have done it right or done it wrong. So what was the reasoning to position your book like that? And do you, is it something that you intentionally did?
Yeah, I think what I was just ranting about, Amber, is what I'm referring to. You're right. This is my most tangible book. The last were why, right? Like, why is this happening? Or what are my beliefs? I wanted to, with this book, really show my chops, and I went very granular. This is dramatically more practical. I mean, people were ready, the book's out for a week, people already are tweeting me pictures of their Facebook page analytics showing that because they're listening to me, that they're getting more engagement. I wanted this to be my textbook, my how-to book. And selfishly, I wanted to show people the deeper chops that I have to why this stuff has actually been working for me outside of what Sarah alluded to, which is the enthusiasm and the charisma.
Interesting. And also some new terms that I've learned in the book. I know one of them is the birdie brag, which I have to tell you, I didn't know what that was. But I think for our audience who are all social media enthusiasts, maybe you could describe that. And you also describe in the book that there's a time and a place for that. And I think they would find this interesting.
So I'm obsessed with this. I'm just so pissed off. And when you retweet nice things being said about you, it's bragging. And the amount of brands that do that, I mean, I picked on Holiday Inn as a case study in my book. I mean, they went 4 days with only retweeting people saying, had a great time at Holiday Inn. Listen, I can brag with the best of them. You brag too much, people tune you out. You know, even humble bragging isn't allowed anymore. So I think that that's the one. And Amber, I think that if you look around, and even our social media friends and our internet famous friends, there's a lot of that going on. I hope that this book brings a little momentum to cut some of that out.
Well, I was just going to retweet this tweet from Tony Baker that says, I like that Amber Max makes Gary Vee sound like a freaking magician. Would that be a birdie brag?
I don't know. I think I need to retweet that and hug him for that. That makes me feel very nice.
You know, it's funny, though, how these sorts of things have come up. I mean, I looked at a slide, a group of slides of yours that went around, Gary, recently, where it was all about, hey, here's what happens when you directly tweet at somebody and a third party isn't following both of those people. They're not following your conversation. And you just need to be aware of that. Put a period in front of that person's name. Then you're kind of gaming the system, but it's totally legit. And that changes things. Then there's the bragging. Then there's the very annoying thing that people do on Twitter. It drives me crazy, where instead of just responding to someone's tweet, they change the sentence around so that you're sort of seeing the answer to a question that you didn't know existed. Right. It drives me crazy, too. Do you have a term for that one?
That one doesn't bother me as much, believe it or not. But I understand what you're saying, because at least what they're trying to do, I think, and why I haven't been bothering it, though I don't do it a whole lot or ever really. But at least it gives you context. They want you to actually see the answer contextually to where it's going. I can understand where that's coming from. I think some people overuse it, so I see where you're coming from. But I haven't decided to pick on that yet. Not just yet, Sarah.
Maybe the next book, right?
Yes, exactly.
Go ahead.
I was going to jump in. Sarah, you know what's funny is, like, I was blown away. Like, I had a feeling that at symbol was a big deal, but the way that SlideShare has been shared and has gone around, I mean, Twitter's got a real problem. Most people, like, it's stunning that the far majority of Twitter users don't realize when you start with a at symbol that the people that only follow both of you will see that. I mean, now, listen, my fear is I don't want people to start making every conversation seen. I think it's a good thing. I just see so many people that intend to have everybody see it that don't.
Definitely interesting. Gary, you mentioned Twitter has a big problem, and just because we don't get you on the show very often, I'm really curious. Sarah and I talk a lot about Facebook, especially over the past few months, and we sort of see it dwindling. There have been reports of it dwindling. What is your stance on Facebook today?
Are you guys talking about the fact that people under 22 are going to Snapchat and Vine and Instagram, is that what you mean?
Yeah, as a place for marketers to go online specifically.
Well, then are you talking about the fact that organic reach is dwindling? Because there's two major conversations going on at the same time.
Yeah, we just talked about organic reach on the show in our news headlines. So if you want to pick up on that, that's probably a good one.
So, I'm going to sound very pro-Facebook, but I am. Let me explain both. Number one, I think that most people that are 28 and older will stay on Facebook for a considerable time. I actually think if it maps very similar to the way we look at restaurants, bars, and nightclubs. I think when you're in your teens and 20s, you always want to go to the cool next thing, right? But when you get kind of married, settled down into your 30s and 40s, you kind of go to your favorite places. I think there's people call it 28 to 32. I'm trying to figure this out. I'm looking at a lot of data, but trying to make a gut feel here. But like, call it early 30s. If you're on your early 30s and you're on Facebook, you're not going anywhere. You may add Instagram, but there's too many people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s that are not going to be comfortable jumping on every next thing. So I think Facebook having people long-term is going to work just fine. And then they bought Instagram, so they've got that youth play. So I think they're fairly okay there. Obviously, things will evolve and they'll have to evolve. As far as organic reach, Facebook's single biggest asset, guys, is their users. If you look at open rates on email in the last 8 years that have gone from 37% market share across the market down to 12, if you look at Twitter all three of us have been on Twitter for a long time. When I had 100,000 fans instead of 1 million fans, I would get more engagement because it's one big stream right now. And you have a supply and demand of noise issue that happens when you do not filter it. What Facebook's trying to do, yes, of course, there's a part of them that are trying to get more ad revenue to amplify your message. But on the flip side, the organic reach matters because if you saw everything from every marketer and every friend that they posted on Facebook, we would have all been gone a long time ago. And it would go by the way of our habits on email. And Facebook's very aware of that. They have the luxury of seeing what's happened in the email market and they're trying to adjust it. I mean, look, Gmail created a promotions tab to address this issue. It's a real issue. There's so much information going on right now that you have to really start figuring out how to filter some of it for your users or they won't be there.
So, in that vein, what do you think about the trend of temporary media? You mentioned Snapchat. That's probably the biggest example of something that's kind of come out of nowhere that's obviously sticking, and particularly the younger set, but people really like the idea of, well, we don't have to keep all of this.
I love it. And you know what I love about that, Sarah, even more? Do you know that I've been able to make things trend on Twitter for the first time in 4 years because I'll snap something and say, hey, use this hashtag? And even though I have 5,000 people I'm probably sending it to. Oh, by the way, that's a pain in the ass. I have to hit every person one by one. Snapchat, get your crap together.
Yeah.
Even though it's really interesting. The reason it works and the reason that happens is because
the beauty of the snap is that people are actually paying attention. See, everybody's confused. Everybody wants width. I don't care how many followers I have, and I know I have good numbers. I care about how many care. And so this is a depth game. And the one game we're all playing for is attention, right? And so attention matters. And so what Snapchat's enabling is that when you get that snap, you're actually looking at it because you know that, first of all, Snapchat makes messages disappear if you get enough of them like I do. And second of all, for those 9 seconds, you actually pay attention and then you move on with your day. And so I think Snapchat is a very effective storytelling platform. I think they need to evolve. I don't know how good the entrepreneurs are and what they'll navigate over the next half decade. But listen, there's a room for a lot of things. And I think Snapchat and disappearing content, I'm surprised we haven't seen a quicker, fast follower to that disappearing content. I know there's Whisper, there's some things out there, but I think you'll see more of those kind of things because what you get from that is attention.
Mm-hmm. Definitely makes sense. Gary, I don't want you to have to leave, but do you have to go?
I'll spend a couple more minutes. I adore you guys so much and we never get to do this. So
amazing.
I will fight. I'm gonna fight for a couple more minutes. Go ahead, keep going.
I have to ask really specific questions because you have so much great advice in your book and things you talk about, like using hashtags and developing campaigns around hashtags. And I just think there's one little story I read that you were talking about how hashtags can help to create a great campaign if you're clever and creative. Can you just quickly kind of, you know, run through some ideas of how you can use hashtags in your social media marketing and how they can be effective?
Everybody wants to be a puncher instead of a counterpuncher. Right? This is another boxing thing. I'm playing around a little. I'm a counterpuncher. Let me explain. If I wanted to say, if I wanted to say that I was on the show right now, I could tweet that out and link it or retweet it. I did retweet it because I was trying to get my Skype to work and I didn't have time. What I wanted to do and what I would have done right now is, you know, right now, hashtag World Cup draw or hashtag The Sound of Music Live. They're trending right now. If you can be clever with your copy and tie in what you're doing to what's trending, you can get far more interesting results. Now, you'll get a lot of awareness because people will look at it. A lot of it won't be qualified, but some of it will. And it challenges you to be more creative with your copy. So I could have tweeted, forget The Sound of Music Live. I'm on with the gals on Twit Live now, join me, link. And what that would have done is got me 100,000 more impressions, of which only 7 to 12 matter or cared, and of which 4 will convert. But it's still 4 more people that are gonna tune in, listen right now than I would have gotten otherwise. I don't think people are paying attention to jumping on trend topics. Instead, they wanna create their own trending topics. And unless you're like a 15-year-old rapper, you're not creating a trending topic.
That's really interesting because, I mean, that's an old trick of news headlines, right? I mean, particularly on the web, it's like, what's the big thing? Let's talk right. about The Sound of Music and then make it about whatever we wanted to write about in the first place. And I think that it is particularly anybody who spends enough time online, you go, oh, I know that trick. That was a cheap page view. But on something like Twitter with hashtags, it's still sort of a murky area and you can get some traction there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just confused that people, again, the boxing was an inside joke for me. Boxing is known as the sweet science. I think there's a beautiful road in my mind, guys. There's a small town in middle America. I have a picture in my mind as I'm thinking right now, and there's a cross streets, and it's creative way and analytics drive. There's this beautiful corner that I want to live on, which is this cross section of analytics, and which is tactics and creativity. I don't just believe in the numbers. All these big data guys, all the data guys and gals that think data solves everything. If that was the case, this would all be over already. So it's a mix. It's a blend of data and creativity. And so you've got to have both. And I spend a lot of time on the science of it.
And with your new book and all of the things that you're doing right now, speaking, and I think I ask you this every single time you come on the show, but I wonder, you know, I see your engagement with people on Twitter. You engage more than anyone that I know. I just wonder, you know, how do you keep up? How do you manage it all? Or is that even an option, Gary?
It's a religion, right? It's my thesis. I do not think I'm entitled to anything, no matter how successful I get. So the only reason I think I should be worth listening to, which is the luxury I've been awarded, is because I execute and actually drive results and make things happen, and because I actually care about the people that care about what I have to say. And so when somebody says I'm doing a good job on the show, when somebody says I'm doing a good job on the show, or I said something smart on the show, I'm going to say thank you, and I care. And if people are tweeting, I mean, I'm driven by gratitude. I'm thankful people give a crap about me or what I have to say. And so I just lack entitlement, even though I come across with plenty of bravado and all that. That's in me too. I've got that. But I have a whole lot of the other stuff too.
somebody, oh God, is that me? No. It's just sometimes people ring my doorbell and then my Google voice goes crazy. Gary, let's say you've got somebody who's watching this interview and saying, gosh, I'm getting pumped up. I just have to try harder. But there are also the people who it's too much. And with social media, there is sort of a line that you have to walk where you don't want to turn people off. And Amber and I get a lot of questions about that on the show. How do you ladies make sure that you are promoting what you're interested in and trying to be very authentic, but not overdoing it and then losing an audience?
By throwing more jabs. Right? I mean, that's the game, right? I mean, like, what am I doing here? Do I think some people will get exposed to me and maybe buy the book? Sure. Do I expect it or feel like I'm entitled to it? Absolutely not. What I'm doing here is I'm listening to your guys' questions, and I know your audience very well. It's a much more tech-savvy audience than other things that I do, and I'm trying to give the best darn answers I can and provide value and let the chips fall where they are. I try to put out value. I put out content. I mean, you guys know my career. I put out Wine Library TV every day for 5 years and never asked anybody to buy anything, right? Mm-hmm. So, I think the answer is to put out jabs. You guys should be making infographics. You should be continuing to get great guests. You guys do a great job. Do more content specifically for the social networks, for your audience, and you'll do better when you're saying Gary B's on Twitter now, because the infographic that you put out yesterday or the link to a great Medium article that you guys, curated that somebody else put out on the Amazon drone thing. You need to bring value. You need to be a media company and bring value. Media companies have value, 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 ad, right? Full page ad. Value, 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 full page ad. Follow that thesis. Give, 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 then ask.
I think that's pretty good advice, Amber. What do you think?
I think it's great advice. I love talking to you. I'm following along with the Twitter stream while we're talking, and people are getting a lot of value out of it. So thank you so much for joining us, for sure, Gary.
I love you very much. Go ahead.
I just have one more question. I'm curious if your next book is about executing, because I keep seeing you on Twitter. You're talking about executing. You're always executing. Is that your next book, Gary? Can you tell us here?
So I'd love to give you guys a scoop. Listen, I didn't think I was going to write another book for years. I only wanted to write one more book after Thank You Economy called How I Bought the Jets, the Gary Vee story. I'm a counterpuncher. Like I said earlier, I have no clue what I'm going to talk about. I'll wake up on one day, just like I did with this one, and think the only books I write are books that I think I've got a philosophy or details of something that most people won't understand for at least another year, because it takes so long for a book to come out. So, I don't know. I mean, listen, I believe in execution more than anything, but that sounds again like a why book. And I'm very into the feedback that I'm getting for this new book because it's a how-to.
Gary, you mentioned VaynerMedia has grown quite a bit. You said from 30 people to 200 employees. For anybody who's just...
Actually, the flip, 20 to 300.
From 20 to 300, okay. Well, my goodness. That's huge growth. In fact, it surprised me because... I don't know. It's you and AJ, and I just kind of remember when VaynerMedia was in its infancy. And for anybody who's not so in tune with what you guys are doing over there, tell us a little bit about the company and why you have 300 employees now.
We're a strategy and creative shop. So we help Fortune 500 companies like Mountain Dew and Dove and, GE. We try to figure out what their business objectives are on social networks, and then we create the creative. I mean, literally the book that I just wrote. Reason we've grown is because I was right. This is just, again, bravado. 4 or 5 years ago, I thought more and more of our eyeballs and our ears would go into these platforms. 4 or 5 years ago, I thought everybody would ruin it like email marketing by just throwing right hooks. I've studied it, gone the other way, and I've been able to drive business results because of it.
Well, Gary, I know you have to go, but I do want to just leave you with this one tweet that just came in from AJ Jackson, who says, Gary V is more entertaining than hashtag the sound of music live.
I saw that. I watched it. I saw it.
Listening to him now. So you have a very smart and savvy audience who are listening along the way, getting lots of great advice. And I know there's lots of advice in your book as well. So you should go catch your plane.
Thank you. Bye, guys. I adore you.
Bye, Gary. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Jab, 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 Amber. What do you think? It's good advice. Makes sense.
I'm pumped up, Sarah. I feel like I'm ready to wrestle or something.
Jab, right hook. It makes sense to me. Yeah, I you know, got to love Gary. Gary and I actually worked together for a time over Eurovision 3 when he was doing Wine Library TV, and I was working there. And, you know, it's funny. He'll say, you just got to, you know, you got to care. And it's a religion. And it's funny because I know that he really does feel that way, and he really is putting in the effort, and he probably doesn't get enough sleep at night. But it also, and it's something that we can all aspire to listen to him and get a lot of great advice. The hashtag one was an amazing way to put it, you know, follow trending topics and kind of be able to use that to your advantage while still being creative. That said, there is something very special about Gary Vee.
Yeah, there is definitely something special. He gets me all excited to, you know, do more, stay up all night, drink lots of caffeine.
Right, right. A few people in our chat room were saying, like, I'm just exhausted. there's a lot. You know, it's sort of an intoxicating energy. It really is. Gary Vaynerchuk.com. Obviously, that is where you can get all the links to Jab, 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 Right Hook, which is Gary's new book, as well as pretty much everything else that he does on a regular basis. And all of the links are there. If for some reason you love social media and you're not super familiar with Gary, I don't know where you've been living under, but he's a real force, and nobody knows social better than Gary. All right, Amber, let's take another break and thank Shutterstock for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Shutterstock is kind of amazing because it has over 1 million video clips that are high quality. I mean, this is like really good stuff that can help you make a creative project that anyone would envy and make you look like an absolute pro. Maybe you're building something for your website. You're putting together some sort of a video. Maybe you work in advertising. You can choose from over 1 million of those video clips that are in a variety of digital formats. Maybe you need something very specific. That's all fine and good. In fact, they have really nice, sophisticated search tools. So you can just kind of be randomly browsing. O'Brien's looking for space shuttle stuff right now. Or you might need something that's space related that, you know, it has a certain color involved. Shutterstock is actually really good at that. So you can end up getting something pretty specific based on what you're looking for. A lot of the contributors to Shutterstock, by the way, are professional filmmakers. So these are people that they know what they're doing, and their stuff looks amazing. Yeah, you've got some superimposed green screen type of stuff too. Brian always likes to show this because you can put video down just right over your own video, and it's like, oh wow, that's pretty cool. Shutterstock also adds 12,000 video clips each week, and sometimes there are kitties licking each other's faces. Ugh. Wow.
So cute.
Oh my goodness. I mean, that's just like, that's heaven for me right there. I could just put together a video of that. I might be the only one who wanted to watch it, but I wouldn't even have to take any of my own video. This is all better looking stuff than I'm ever going to put together. 12,000 video clips each week too. So every time you visit, you've got a whole new library of new content. So that just makes a subscription make sense. It makes it not just fun, but actually extremely useful. You can choose between individual clips or video packs. Then when you download clips, you can download in HD, you can save to standard def, variety of web formats, depending on what it is you need. And you can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. Don't worry about a credit card. It's not necessary. You just start an account, start using Shutterstock, start saving some clips to a Lightbox, which is really nice if you just want to have a central repository to save things, or if you're working with another person or even a team and you say, hey, you know, I saved some cat videos and I say, Amber, just go in and tell me which one you like the best. What were you going for? Maybe you're collaborating with some other people. And when you decide to purchase a plan, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR1213. That's SOCIALHOUR1213. And new accounts will receive 25% off any package. Not a bad deal, people. That's Shutterstock.com. And for 25% off new accounts, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR1213 for December 2013. Okie dokie. Should we talk about, let's talk about our social marketing spotlight since we had some great marketing advice from Gary Vee just a few minutes ago about Starbucks.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. Starbucks had a campaign recently, a Tweet a Coffee campaign, and it was really simple. All you had to do was use the hashtag that they were recommending and promoting, and then you would tweet someone else's name, and then you could give that person a gift certificate digitally, obviously, for $5. And this was all based on you connecting your credit card with your Twitter account, and they generated about $180,000 in purchases, which is not too bad with a campaign where they were experimenting like this. And I don't know. I think this is something that I would do, you know, just to be able to kind of treat someone to a coffee and be able to do it so easily through Twitter. I think it's a neat idea and a neat campaign.
You know, this reminds me of, this had nothing to do with Starbucks, but a couple of years ago, you could tweet a beer to somebody. And it wasn't really a beer. It was, you know, you're tweeting basically money into an account that somebody could then use to, you know, cash out. But Tom Merritt actually tweeted a beer to me, and it was like this sort of funny thing that you were doing over Twitter. So same idea, but yeah, I think this is a great campaign, and clearly has generated enough interest. I mean, $180,000 is nothing to shake a stick at.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting experiment, right? Because we've talked over and over again about how Twitter is going to be able to monetize and different advertising strategies. So if they've been, you know, reasonably successful with a campaign like this, I think it just gives promise to other marketers out there to be able to use the platform for other types of Twitter commerce. So a good little success story in our social media marketing spotlight.
You know, this relates to nothing really, Amber, but I went and saw the musical Book of Mormon last night. Have you seen this?
I have not.
It's very funny. You know, it's a certain type of humor. It was made by Trey Parker and Matt Stone, who are the creators of South Park. So there is a certain kind of humor that's definitely up my alley. But there's, again, well, you know, without giving away anything, Mormons don't drink coffee. And so there was kind of like a whole Starbucks thing. And I, you know, just really got a kick out of the whole thing. and it's funny to me that it's like, without even, thanks, Brian. If you'd like to get tickets, here's where you go. But it's funny to me that it's turned into just the idea of coffee is now most well represented by something that resembles the Starbucks logo. And I feel like that's almost become a universal thing. We're just, even if we're not talking about Starbucks specifically, anything that reminds us of the Starbucks logo, it's like, coffee, got it. I mean, it's one of the most recognized brands, I think, I could think of.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, it's funny because I think of my son, and when he was probably 2 or 3 years old, that was one of the first logos that he recognized. And that's pretty young to have brand recognition. But nonetheless, you know, if he would see that little logo, he would know exactly what it meant. So I think you're bang on there.
All right, well, let's move on to our social tip of the week, which is quite relevant because, well, I would say we just heard a story about people's passwords being leaked because, you know, some server got hacked into. But this is a story that just keeps happening.
It does. And for our social tip of the week, I thought this was pretty interesting. It's from Lifehacker, and they do a great little write-up here about a tool called LastPass, and it lets you save your passwords. And the idea is basically it will import saved passwords from your browser, assuming that you've saved passwords while you're browsing within your browser. And it will also help you just manage your passwords better and give you a sense of where you have duplicate passwords. So say if a service was hacked, you understand understand that, oh, you also use that password on another site, because we know how important it is that you do change those passwords. So a simple little tool. They even go in on the Life Hacker article to explaining why, you know, some people are obviously concerned about using different tools like this that save passwords. It seems kind of, you know, kind of silly to think, okay, I'm going to use a tool that saves passwords after my password got stolen digitally. I would do the same thing digitally. But nonetheless, they have a pretty good write-up about the security within this particular tool if you want to dive more into that.
This is a great tool. This is certainly anybody who watches Security Now here on the Twit Network. Leo and I talk about app versions of LastPass. 1Password is another service that is similar, although LastPass is great. We do talk about these tools fairly often on various shows here on Twit, and it really is the best way to not only not have to worry about having a bunch of complicated passwords. I mean, it makes things convenient for you, but it also makes you so much more secure than you could be, you know, even just thinking up complicated passwords on your own. And for your loved ones, so many of you are going to be home for the holidays, and all of the, I mean, I'm sort of the technical person in my family. You start getting these people saying, oh, it's so nice to see you. Can you fix my computer? I've got these problems. And yeah, we've all been there. So
oh, yeah.
For those of us who kind of want to be the hero, this is the type of thing that you could set your mom up or someone else in your family or friends and help them be more secure, even if they don't really understand that they need to be.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a good little tool. In fact, I don't use it, but I think I'm going to give it a whirl and start using it. Now, Sarah, this is interesting. I know you added this to our lineup. I was going to add it, and it just kind of slipped my mind, so I'm glad you put it on here, which is an event alert for an event that Instagram has coming up in just a few days.
Yeah, on December 12th, so it's just under a week from today, Instagram is having a little New York City event, and it has invited the press, as companies tend to do. But what's interesting about this particular event is it was something that came in the physical mail via FedEx to certain reporters, and it was like a little like a little piece of wood, or sort of a box that was wrapped in paper. And when you open it up, there's an Instagram shot on the wood, and then a little hook to hang somewhere on the back of it. So you think, okay, well, what's this whole announcement about? Is it about printing out your Instagram photos? That makes the most sense. We talked about it a little bit on TNT this morning, and it's like, this is the perfect time. I mean, this is just a great gift. I also have used lots of third-party services to print out Instagram photos that I've taken that I like. I've got one on my wall right now that's like a bunch of shots that I've taken of Paris that I just think are really cool, and I want to look at them when I walk by, and you know, rather than only being able to see it in the app or on the web. So, but that's never anything that Instagram's gotten into before. So what do you think, Amber? Is that going to be a big moneymaker for them?
I think a lot of people would be into that for sure. I mean, I just posted something on Facebook recently about a service where you could, I believe you could print your Instagram photos on marshmallows, maybe. I mean, it was like edible Instagram or something along those lines. It was an article in The Atlantic. So we know people who use Instagram are obsessive about it. They absolutely love it. They want to be able to take those memories digitally and save them. So I think printing them out and Instagram having a printing service does make sense. I think they would probably do pretty well from that, because people who use Instagram love their Instagram photos.
Very true. Social Print Studio is, I believe, is that? Or Printstagram is the service that I've used, but the company is Social Print Studio. They have quite a few products. And in fact, I think they just introduced large format printing, which means, you know, something that's maybe bigger than an 8x10, which is usually the biggest that anybody's color photo printer can do at home. It's a special size. And I thought, oh, that's cool. Okay, well, I'll think of some photos that maybe I would like to experiment with. But the point is that these third-party services are probably doing quite well, and I'm sure that people at Instagram and, of course, Facebook, who is Instagram's owner, understand that and figure, why wouldn't we just provide the service within the company and stop sending people elsewhere? You know, there is also some talk, Amber, and this doesn't really have a lot to do with printing out photos, that Instagram may be building an internal messaging system. So
yes,
it would be a little bit more than you and I just commenting on each other's photos and at replying each other, but something where we can kind of take it to almost like the equivalent of a Twitter DM or a Facebook message Facebook messages are very handy. I use them often. Group messages on Facebook, again, that's a great way to be able to get a hold of a few people that I know are all on Facebook and looking at it regularly. Would you use that on Instagram?
I feel like I have too many ways to message people right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I would necessarily use it. And Sarah, I mentioned this on the show before, but I kind of stopped using Instagram a couple of months ago, which I know sounds terrible, but I just got lazy because Twitter has filters and then your photos show up inline, and I kind of ditched it. So I love Instagram, but I'm not sure that I need any more messaging. I mean, I do like direct messages on Twitter and I do use them a lot and they're very handy. But other than that, I feel like there's just too many. I mean, if you think you're signed up for five or six of the bigger social networks that are out there and you're doing messaging on each of them, I mean, I'm just bound to miss so much stuff that it just becomes overwhelming.
Then again, there's a certain group of people that I know on Instagram. And yeah, I'm no photographer, but I like Instagram a lot and I'm definitely active there. But there's kind of this Instagram community of people who are very talented and they've all kind of become very social with one another because they're all... they've got the love of photography in common and visuals. And so to that end, let's say you meet somebody and you sort of become internet friends. I've got a lot of those, but it's really just something that happened on Instagram. And where do you take that conversation? Because then there might be other things that you want to talk about. And this person is your friend now and you want to communicate with them. Where do you go? So in that vein, I can see maybe Instagram saying, we have enough of these people who have sort of found each other. And to create a sense of community, this tool, even if we don't all use it, some people would use it, so why not?
Yeah, that's a good point. Because I know people who use Instagram who don't use Twitter or other tools a lot, but they just love Instagram. So I think I could see them taking advantage of that for sure. Now, Sarah, we have a spotlight. It's a spotlight about Apple buying Topsy for about $200 million. And this is an interesting story. I saw this across a lot of the tech sites, the article that you found from TechCrunch, and just talking about why they may want to do something like this and what it says about Apple's interest in the social space. And there are some just suggestions here in the article in terms of why they made that move.
Yeah, it's weird because Topsy is this great, it's a great service that I've been using for the last few months once they introduced some tools to allow you to find old tweets, your own old tweets, other people's old tweets. It went a few steps beyond what Twitter offers, which is it allows you to download your own archives of tweets. But as we all know, if you want to search for somebody who tweeted something 2 years ago, good luck. It kind of can't be done. Topsy does allow you to do that. There's some advanced Twitter search tools that actually, you know, you gotta click around and figure out how it works. But it can be done, and I've used it quite a few times to search up things that are very specific, whether it's a certain time frame or from a certain person, or maybe I remember that I replied to this person, but I couldn't tell you what it was about, or there was a link that I'm looking for again. Topsy was great for that. So why didn't Twitter buy Topsy? When I heard Apple bought Topsy, it was like, and I think it was right over Thanksgiving weekend, I thought, have I eaten too much turkey? I don't understand why this makes a lot of sense. I figure, you know, and I've got no crystal ball, Amber, but I figure Topsy's service must change soon. Apple doesn't want to be in the business of being the archival service for tweets, but if you have all of this rich data on who has been communicating when over the last however many years and who is also searching for those sorts of things, I guess that can help very much in your own future social efforts. And Apple, to this day, really doesn't have any sort of like a social network win to speak of.
Yeah, they really don't. You know, it's interesting because I haven't really thought about that much in terms of Apple's play in the social world. They tried to do some stuff in the past. I'm thinking particularly around iTunes, but they really
didn't really go anywhere.
Been too successful. And I mean, I think one of the reasons could just be that Apple is a very anti-social company. Let's be honest, right? You know, you're not going to find Apple reps thanking you for buying iPads on Twitter. It just doesn't happen. So I don't think of them as the most open and social company around. So it is a bit of a surprise to see them playing in this space. So I think you're right. It's not going to last. The service is going to have to inevitably change and become something else. So I think the Siri suspicions make some sense to me. The Siri integration somehow with social media sites. But I don't think it will stay the service that it is today.
No, it's weird. I get all excited because, I mean, obviously I cover a lot of Apple news. So I get excited when I hear about Apple buying a company that I like. Even if it goes away, because I mean, they're not buying a company for $200 million for no reason, whether it's a good idea or not. There's a clear strategy here. And, you know, maybe it's because they didn't want Twitter to buy it. I'm not sure. But I do kind of get excited about what does the future hold? Even if it was just to buy the talent, they're talented people who have already made a good service. So let's see, Apple, what do you got? What do you got in 2014?
We'll see what happens with that one. And sorry, I know we're going to do a quick ad, but I just want to tease our rat or fat little bit, because this is the headline for this is it's about a product, and it says, I won't name the product, says this, a product that you wouldn't be ashamed to take home to your mother. That's my tease.
Oh.
For rat or fat.
Good. We all want that. Certainly.
That's part of the headline on TechCrunch.
So. Very good. Well, while you are wondering what Amber could possibly be ready to show us, we will take a moment to thank our third and final sponsor, Warby Parker. Hi again, Warby Parker, for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Warby Parker, if you're like, I don't know who that is, it's a company that's made some pretty extreme changes to the industry of eyewear, eyeglasses, sunglasses. Why? Well, if you've ever gone into one of those fancy eyeglasses stores and you think, I want a pair of frames that really make me look good, and you know, and at the same time they're prescription or whatever. I mean, they're ridiculously expensive. And in fact, it's very discouraging. I'd like to wear more glasses, but hey, it's super expensive. Well, once you know about Warby Parker, you feel a little bit better about it, because they're made with very high quality materials, same ones that they sell in boutique shops, but they're available at very affordable prices. And they're styled after classic vintage frames. So a lot of these frames feel very classic and familiar to you. It's good stuff. I mean, this is fashionable stuff, but it's just not overpriced. In fact, manufacturers keep prices for eyewear really high, especially for people who need to get bifocals or that sort of thing anyway. It's like, well, you're kind of stuck. You need glasses. You don't want them to look terrible. Well, that's where Warby Parker comes in. Glasses start at $95, and that includes prescription lenses. Those are prices that are really, really difficult to find. What is also really cool about Warby Parker is often you think, well, sure, this all sounds good, but glasses are very unique, very something that fits your face is very difficult. Yeah, you want to go to a boutique and look at them in the mirror. You're not just going to buy a pair of glasses online and hope that they look good. Warby Parker allows you to choose 5 pairs of glasses that you're kind of on the fence about. Like, yeah, you know, these are sort of the styles that I like. At warbyparker.com, by the way. And then they will send them to you. In fact, they send you the 5 pairs of glasses. In fact, I have my little 5 that a couple months ago I went through and chose. I was looking for sunglasses. I don't actually wear glasses because I don't need them. But I wanted some cool sunglasses that, you know, made me look kind of hip and with it, whatever. And I wanted something that they were really dark when I'm driving and that sort of thing. And so I thought, okay, well, I think I know what I want. And Warby Parker will send you 5 of them. So then you can not only put them on and see what they look like, but see how they feel. Do they fit your nose? Are they comfortable? That sort of thing. You know, these, once I got them, I went, oh, I look stupid in these glasses. I really liked them on the site. Thank goodness I didn't go ahead and buy them and have to return them, that sort of thing. That's what's so cool about this program, is that it is truly a try before you buy type of a model. Special frame box, prepaid shipping for easy return. So this is not a hassle for you. It's absolutely a convenience. Then when you choose the frames that you want, you send back the glasses, prescription details if you need to add that as well. And then Warby Parker sends you your final pair of the glasses that you chose. And they're the perfect glasses because you've already tried them and you know that they're the best ones. Plus, for every pair of glasses you purchase, Warby Parker sends a pair to someone in need. They partner with a variety of nonprofits. Vision Spring is one of them. And Warby Parker can make a great gift. Let's not forget that this is December and many people are buying gifts right now. You can surprise somebody that you love with a Warby Parker gift card. $50, $95, $150. They'll send it along with a Make a Snowman kit. I am not kidding. This is a fun offer. Yeah. So there's something kind of extra fun to unwrap. And in, if you're interested in that, maybe you don't need glasses, but you know somebody who does. Maybe they don't even know they need glasses, but you know somebody who has terrible glasses. And you're just kind of wanting to give them the gift of style. WarbyParker.com/gift-card is the website there. But if you're just interested in the free home try-on, like I showed you, when you decide to purchase, get 3-day free shipping by using the promo code SOCIALHOUR. That's easy to remember. No other numbers or anything. Just go to Warby Parker when you're ready to purchase and they ask for your promo code. Just type in SOCIALHOUR and you get that free shipping. And we thank Warby Parker for their support of our show. All right, Amber, it's time for Rad or Fed. And I definitely want to make everyone's mothers happy.
Okay, so like I said, I kind of stole this headline from TechCrunch, and the product is called AirFi, and it's a Wi-Fi hotspot. So basically a router that is really beautifully designed. And what's interesting about it, which this is the thing that makes it really social, Sarah, it has about 50 built-in LED lights that will allow it to change color if you get Facebook updates or phone calls. You can even potentially use IFTTT, so it can have other interactive features. And the goal of creating this product was that they wanted to do something in the router space because routers are just so darn ugly and boring, and they wanted to mix it up. This is an Indiegogo campaign right now, although it looks at, based on this article, like at Disrupt Berlin. The writer of the article got a chance to look at one of these and thinks it's kind of interesting. They'd run for about $169 each.
Well, I mean, it's more, that's more expensive certainly than just your basic old router that you could pick up and have do the job. But it's true, routers are historically very ugly. In fact, Amber, my router right now at my house is shoved behind my TV console. I mean, it's sort of like hanging by its cables
exactly.
on its side because I just need it to work, but I don't want to look at it. I hate it.
I know. It's so funny because just before the show, I was plugging into my wired connection and the router kind of fell off the shelf and all the cables were back there and, you know, just kind of shove it in the corner, of course. So when I saw this, I thought, hey, this is kind of neat. I think that I might be into this. The neat thing about it, too, for retailers is you could use it in stores and it can have a whole bunch of other features that are available for it. So I think it's a really clever idea to take something that is typically that unattractive and turn it into something that could be deemed beautiful.
Absolutely. AirFi. $160, huh? Again, not a terrible gift. We've got quite a few gift ideas on this show today.
We do.
I like Gary's it. I think book. This is There's very lots. Rad. In fact, I hope that it's not a fad to have the type of technology that we need become more and more fun to look at as well. The Nest thermostat comes to mind.
It's a perfect example.
Yeah. I mean, why do thermostats have to be so darn ugly? The one in my house is awful. If I owned a home, I would get a Nest, first chance I got. So AirFi, same idea. Why do routers have to be ugly? No way.
It's true. And I think the product right now, because they are doing an Indiegogo campaign, I think they only have a few thousand dollars. They need to raise a lot more. But this is one of those products that I think I could see this definitely getting into stores and being relatively popular. So I think it's rad.
I think it's rad, too. That's two rads from us. Absolutely. We do want to hear from you. We love getting your feedback. In fact, I think Gary Vee had a little bit to do with it, but everybody was really good about interacting with us live during the show. Obviously, if you're watching or listening to the show on demand after we record, you're not participating live, but you can always email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv with ideas for stories that you'd like us to cover or topics that you think would be great for discussion, guests that you would like to see in 2014, which is right around the corner. Reminder, by the way, Amber and I have, let's see, it is now Friday the 6th. We've got two more shows after today before it turns into January. So this is, you start thinking now what you want our 2014 to look like on the Social Hour. And by the way, I should remind you that starting January, the first week of January, which turns into January 2nd, which is a Thursday, Amber and I move to our new time, right now. Friday's at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. We're going to move up a day and a little bit earlier in the day. So we'll be immediately after Tech News Today on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Amber and I are going to feel just a little brighter-eyed and bushy-tailed during the week. And we'll be bringing our social news to you for everybody who likes to watch and listen live. Just starting in a couple of weeks. And I'm really excited about that.
So am I. I think it's going to be a great time for us. And maybe towards the end of this year, our last show, we can I'll try to include some articles about some of the best social stories of the year. It's always fun to do wrap ups.
Absolutely. Yes, we have quite a, I mean, I think we could do a pretty cool social best of. In fact, we should just say right now that's what our final show of the year. We'll just do that. All right. Well, that is it for this episode of The Social Hour. Thanks to everybody who watched and listened. Check our Twit schedule if you have any questions about how things are changing. But hopefully it's pretty easy to understand. Of course, in the meantime, you can go to twit.tv/TSH. That is where all of our show archives live. That's where you can find links to subscribe to the show, audio and video feeds in a variety of formats. Try to make it as seamless as possible for you. Amber, it is now December, and it's pretty cold here in Sonoma County in California. What's on deck for you in Toronto, and is it snowing yet?
It is not snowing yet. You know, we don't get a lot of snow downtown Toronto, just on the outskirts of the city. They definitely do get snow, but I will let you know about the first big snowfall, Sarah, because I kind of like the first one. After that, I'm over it, but the first one I do enjoy.
Yeah, where it's still pretty. When
it's pretty, yeah. Then it's slushy and cold and icy, then I'm not such a big fan, but it's okay. It's, you know, it's very festive around the city, lots of things happening for the holidays, and I can't complain. It's all good.
Excellent. Well, we will see all of you right back here next time on The Social Hour. Until then, stay warm, and I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you next week.